Welcome to Ghostwriters Anonymous, an inspirational and interactive podcast where we create worlds through words and writing. I'm Kelsey, and today I'd like to know, if you were the closing statement in a letter, what closing statement would you be? I would be sincerely. I'll have you guys know that Graceline is in the works. We've already recorded it. And when Leah was in town, she gifted me a few books. One of them was 10 Years in Flight by Randall Weber. And Randall Weber is Leah's maternal grandfather. But I just started this book, and so far I am spellbound by it. I think the topic of flight has always been fascinating to me, especially because I grew up next to an airport. But also, he's speaking of a time that my grandfather reminisces about, because he and Randall were the same age, they grew up in the same area. So I guess in a way it makes me feel the same sort of comfort that I would get talking to my grandfather. So since I'm still reading this book, I am in his training period. In this particular excerpt, which is chapter 3, Lost in the Night, it is December 1953. He has already finished 20 hours in the Piper Cub, which was the first airplane that he trained in, and he has now graduated to the T-6. It's called the AT-6, but they always call it the T-6. So he's clocked some hours on this plane already, and in this story, he has just been cleared for his very first solo night navigation mission, a training mission. You might get a map out so you can follow my navigation. We were to fly a triangle from Malden, Missouri to Paducah, Kentucky, to Blytheville, Arkansas, and back to Malden, about a 2-hour round robin. The T-6 cruised at about 125 miles per hour, and we were to maintain 3,000 feet so the control ships, T-6s with instructors, at Paducah and Blytheville could identify us as we reported in, and then they would clear us on to the next turning point. I hopped in my T-6 and set course for Paducah. In the flight shack, it looked so simple, I didn't bother making out a flight log. This was my big mistake. I would just follow my map by pilotage. The first leg was so easy. I could see all the familiar highways out of Malden, then Charleston, Missouri, then Cairo, Illinois, then I could see Paducah up ahead. It was a perfectly clear night, millions of stars, but no moon. The ground was like a pool of ink. A cold front had passed through the area that morning and left a northwest wind of 30 knots at our flight level of 3,000 feet. When I got right over the center of Paducah, I called the control aircraft and he answered and told me to flash my landing lights. I did, and he saw me and told me I was cleared on to Blytheville, Arkansas. I made my turn to the southwest, and for the first time I felt a little uncomfortable. I had not calculated an exact heading. I was just flying southwest, and I couldn't see any major highways or cities up ahead, because there weren't any. In 1953, this was a very spare area, and now I realized I should have made a flight log. I kept looking back at Paducah on my tail and started zigzagging, trying to find a comfortable heading. I had to wrestle my map on my knees with a flashlight and fly the airplane all at the same time, which was very difficult. I kept looking back at Paducah as it was fading away. I considered going back to Paducah, but I didn't. I couldn't find anything on the ground to match my map. I could not even see the Mississippi River. The course to Blytheville was right along the river, but the river was just not visible. It haunts me to this day how black the ground was. I couldn't find anything on the map, and studying the map with a flashlight and trying to hold 3,000 feet and a southwest heading was becoming chaos. I was beginning to realize I wasn't exactly sure where I was. I looked back on my tail one last time to see Paducah, and it was gone. I was beginning to think I might be lost. I could not see the river nor any town or highways, just scattered farm lights all over the area. I just kept flying a general southwest heading, but zigzagging a little to try to find something I could identify. It was a sick feeling I'll never forget. I would have to call in for a DF steer, direction finding. This was the most embarrassing thing that can happen to a pilot. I was the best T-6 pilot in the world, but I was lost, and it was my own fault. If I called for help, all the other pilots would hear it on their radios, and I could never live it down. The DF procedure then was the pilot would call for help, and all control towers had an instrument to show what direction the plane should fly to that aerodrome. The T-6 had about 5 hours of fuel, and I had been up for over an hour. I had about 3.5 hours left. I could not bring myself to call for help yet, but I knew I was lost. I was completely confused, but I just kept flying in a southwesterly direction trying to think of something. This goof may just wash me out of the flying program. I felt terrible. Then I saw a red glow up ahead, about 20 degrees to my left. This had to be some big city. Maybe this was Blytheville after all. But it was off to my left, and my gut feeling was that it wasn't Blytheville. But since I was going to have to bite the bullet sooner or later, I headed straight for the red glow. The closer I got, the better I felt. I could see a big, beautiful runway on the south side of the city. It was the wrong side of the city for Blytheville, so I knew it was not Blytheville. But I thought if worse comes to worse, I could just land safely here and take the consequences. So I decided to make my call to the control ship as if I was over Blytheville, even though I knew I wasn't. I had to do something, but I wasn't leaving that beautiful runway down there until I knew where I was. He answered me and asked me to flash my landing lights. He said he couldn't see me. I just said, "I'm over a large city with a big airfield on the south side of town." He answered, "You're over Dyersburg, Tennessee." I answered, "Let me check it out." So I started wrestling my map again in that dark cockpit and found Dyersburg, and everything did check. The control ship called me back and told me to just fly due west and I couldn't miss Blytheville. What a relief. I knew I was going to get a good reprimand when I got back to Malden, but I did not have to call for an embarrassing DF steer. In just a few minutes, I could see Blytheville coming into view. I reported in, and then turned north and followed the highway up to Malden and landed without further incident. I did get a good scolding for not making a flight log and adjusting for the strong northwest crosswind, but the saving grace was that about a dozen other guys had fallen into the same trap. I wasn't the only one lost. About six of us were caught red-handed, but you should have heard all the stories the next day, just among the students, from the guys who were lost but found their way out without getting caught. Some of the guys turned on their radio compasses, but my instructor hadn't yet shown us how to use them. It was to come later on in our training. One of my closest buddies, Fred Reinhardt, was also in the Dyersburg area, also lost, and we were all on the same radio frequency. And Fred heard me make my call over Dyersburg, recognized my voice, and saw me flash my landing lights, so he then knew where I was, and he then followed me from a distance so he didn't get caught. Of the guys that got lost but didn't get caught, the prize went to Lieutenant West. He simply climbed to 10,000 feet. He said he could see everything from that altitude. He could see Malden's beacon light all the way around the course. Then he let down to 3,000 feet to make his reports over the turning points. Why didn't I think of that? The punishment for the six of us that were caught was to fly again the same route the next night solo. I was relieved because I was afraid I would have to take another dual ride with an instructor and get rechecked. With a well-prepared flight log, it was a very simple mission. Everything appeared right on time. A lesson learned. One last comment on night flying. If there is a full moon, you can see everything and it's really not true night flying. Later, while I was instructing students in T-28s and T-33s with a full moon, students would actually forget to turn on their landing lights during final approach because they could see so well. Then the other extreme is if there is no moon at all. Then it's almost solid instrument conditions. There's a world of difference. Some of this lingo I'm not familiar with, but he gives you enough information to sort of piece it together. Like, for example, when he says solid instrument conditions, I really don't have a clear sense of what that is. So maybe that's where Google could become my friend. And in fact, Google was my friend in this because I did get out my map and track his flight log. Malden, Missouri is in the boot heel of Missouri. It's right on the edge of Kentucky and Arkansas and Missouri. So that's why he was able to traverse three states in a two-hour round-robin trip. And he expresses in other chapters how when you're up there alone, sure, you have the radio, but, you know, it's up to you if something goes wrong to start troubleshooting. And so he said that it's fun because it's freeing when you're alone, but then also stuff like this happens where you're trying to figure out how do I get out of this, which to me, that would just set you up for future problem-solving skills. Here he is thinking he's this big dummy, and then he finds out, to his great relief, that he wasn't the only one. In fact, there were several more in his class that were stumped and didn't know where they were going. Such a charming thing to read, and I'm really eating up stuff like this. I don't know if I'm just reaching an age where I appreciate a good autobiography, but I loved nothing more than laying on my couch last night, reading this book till 3 o'clock in the morning, and then I thought, well, I should probably get to bed because I'm trying to be on a day schedule. I'd also like to add here that if you're interested in this book, then please email us at gwritersanon@gmail.com, because I don't think this book was published for commercial use, so I don't think you could just buy it online or anything like that. It was more a publication for Leah's family, just like what her mother had done. That being said, it's an awesome book, and I think anyone should read it. In fact, he had submitted it into his local library.